All right, Tabosai. Good morning. Today's daf is Tzadik Gimel, but we are starting Tzadik Beis Amud Beis 92b. This is absolutely wonderful. I mean, every daf is wonderful Gemara, but this Gemara is so rich with just life advice. I'm sorry, we can't spend more time on each piece, but okay, you'll go back and see it on your own. So let's pick up. So again, 93 is today's daf. We're picking up 92b, and we are picking up Menachem Milsa, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 lines up from the bottom. So Amarle Rava the Rabbi Marmari. Menachem Milsa Meirshi. From where do we know this thing that people say? Bara Dishasis Mine Lotishti Bikala. A well that you drink from, don't throw a clod of earth into it. Right? Don't throw rocks into the well you drink from. So where do we know this adage from? So Amalei Dechsev Lo Tisoyev Edomi Ki Achichohu Velo Tisoyev Mitzri Ki Ger HaYisa Ba'artso. Right? They will say, absolutely incredible Yisod. Do not go ahead and afflict the Edomi because he is your brother. And do not afflict the Mitzri because you are a stranger in his land. So we'll say, what do you see from here? At the end of the day, as much as Mitzrayim was the seat of our persecution for 210 years, yet what? It offered us shelter, it offered us a home, and it offered us, at least in the beginning, a very good life. It was the well that we drank from, and therefore don't throw stones into it. Incredible. From where do we know the statement that people say, well, so now these are all amazing. Idalis dura dalina. Ve'ilo lo dalina. Where do we know the adage where people say, if you help me lift this load, then I will help lift it. But if you do not help me lift this load, then I will not help lift it. Well, so in other words, then how do you know in life that if somebody wants your assistance, if they're willing to work with you, you should work with them. But if they're essentially trying to offload the responsibilities on you, that you should refuse. Amar lei dechsev vayomer elea barak, im telchi imi vahalachti, because as Barak says to Devorah, the Shofetas, if you will go with me for battle, then I'll go. But if you're not in, I'm not going. It's a very important yisod, by the way. You could often tell people's commitment to any particular life endeavor when they're willing to put skin in the game, right? Meaning people have all kinds of wonderful ideas and people love to share their ideas. You know, you should really do this. And you should really? How about we should really do this? So if we should do it, then I'm in. If it's something that you think I should do, which means you're not committed enough to be involved, then perhaps I have other things I have to do. An incredible yisod. So Barak and Devora. So Mar goes weiter. Amli Rav the Rabbi Marmari. Minahamos, the last three lines. Minahamos, the Rabbi Inchi. This is also amazing. There's so much to say on each of these lines. Okay, maybe we'll learn the whole day Monday. Right, everybody's off. Everybody's off. Yeah, Yachei Kala. Mamish. Good. Good. Make an extra large pot of coffee. What?
There's a line in the road.
There's a line in the road. I can't do it. Good. So let's go. Amr Rava. Amir Sashem. All right. We'll send that. We'll WhatsApp the schedule. Amr Rava l'Rav Bar Mari. Menachem Milsa d'Armi Inchi. Katavion Zutri l'Gavri. Hashto d'Kashishna l'Dardke. Well, so this is amazing. When we were young, we were treated like men. When we were treated like men. In other words, now, Gavri doesn't just mean a man. Gavri means someone important. When we were young, we were treated like someone important. Hashta de kashishna, now that we're old, ledardiki, we're treated like children. So we'll say, so already, for just, by the way, I want to just point out, remember that we're dealing with two different adages in this Gemara. We're dealing with rabbinic sayings and what people say. So it's very important to be mechalik between those two, because the ones that Chazal are saying are infused with Kiddusha. The ones that people say are infused with kind of like life experience type of wisdom. So what is the Gemara saying over here? The Gemara is saying over here that unfortunately sometimes there is a disregard for the elderly. That sometimes, again, there's an incredible emphasis placed on youth. Incredible emphasis placed on youth. And a general disregard expressed for the elderly. Which will say, of course, you understand this fakaret. Meaning, again, we call an elderly person a zakein. And zakein stands for what? Zeshe kana chachma, one who has acquired wisdom. Which is important because you understand, you call every single zakein a zakein, even if he's not a Talmud Chacham. Why? Because Lemaisa, we work under the assumption that if somebody is old, they're wise. Even if it's halavai, it should be because of Torah. But even if it's not because of Torah, it's because of what? Okay. Life experience.
How old is that?
I'm sorry?
How old?
I'm not going to answer that question. How old is that? consult your local Orthodox rabbi. I'm just the maggot here. So says the Gemara. How do we know this? Now, this is actually quite interesting. The Gemara says, Ksiv, v'ashem holech lifnehem ba'amud anan lacho samadera. Because Rabbi Sayyid says, now remember, this is in the beginning when we first left Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu walked before them, right, to go ahead and show them the way, in the cloud, to show them the way. And at night, as a fire. And at the end, when I always say, lebasov means later on, it says, so what the Gemara is contrasting over here is the following. When we first left Egypt, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself led us, which the Gemara is understanding to mean when we were young. When we were young, when we were nationally young. So we were chashev in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he led us himself. When we got older, what happened? Now, Rabbi Mervo said, this actually is after the Chet HaEgel. By the way, it's not so much older. It's less than a year later. But nevertheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm sending a malach in front of you. Although, again, it's actually machlokes on a farshim who the malach is. Some say the malach actually is Yoshua, in which case it would be 40 years later. All right. In any event, the point the Gemara is making over here is that Lemaisa, when we were young, quote-unquote, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself first led us. And when we were older, he sent the malach in front of us. So you see that this dynamic that sometimes there's an emphasis placed on the vitality of youth, and a little less emphasis placed on the elderly. Okay, Amalei Rabba L'Rabbar Mari. Menam Osei Darmi Inshi. Listen to this. Basar Mari Nichsi Tzivi Mashach. If you follow in the trail, if you follow, or I should say, literally, if you follow after a wealthy person, you'll get a little piece of the fat. Now, listen, what does that mean? That if you attach yourself to wealth, meaning if you follow wealthy people in life, it doesn't literally mean like follow, like trail after, they're going to drop money. What it means is that if you attach yourself in life to wealthy people, then lemaisa, again, that wealth will rub off on you. Where do we see that? From Amalei Dechsev, the Gam Lelot HaHolech Esavram, Hayatzon Ubakar Ba'olim. Because if I say, listen to this, the Pasuk says, and also Lot, who traveled with Avram, had sheep and cattle and tents. So the Gemara is attributing ultimately Lot's wealth to the fact that what? Haholich Asavram. Amar Rav Chanan. Hamoser Dina Chavero Hu Ne'en Ashtchila. We'll say very profound Gemara. Someone who is Moser Dina. We'll say Moser Dina Chavero means someone who davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu against another person. So I daven to Hashem and I say, you know, Reuven wronged me. So that's called being Moser Din to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You should judge Reuven for what he's done. So one who is Moser Din HaChavero, who Ne'en Ashtchila, Rebbe says, is an incredible Yisod. The Ribbono Shel Olam, and this is very appropriate, you know, for going into Elul as well, the Ribbono Shel Olam operates with kindness. When I go ahead and I say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I want you to deal with Din, I want you to deal with the attribute of strict justice towards another. What the Beis Din Shalmala does is, really, you're bringing down the Midas Hadin on someone else. Well, first, before you summon down the Midas Hadin on someone else, let's see where you're holding. So whenever you try, that's what I will say, you see this over and over and over in the writings of Chazal, that how careful we have to be with how we treat the other, because how we treat the other ultimately creates the paradigm for how HaKadosh Baruch Hu treats us. So if I'm Moser Din HaChavero, Hu Ne'en Ashtchila, if I try to bring down Din on my friend, so the Beis Din Shalmala deals with Din with me first. That's what it means when it says I'm punished first. Shene'emar, V'atomer Sarei El Avram, Chamosi Alecha. Because we also remember again, Sarei who says to Avram, my disgrace is upon you. Now, this is talked about by the episode with Hagar, where Hagar acted disrespectfully towards Sarei Minu, and Sarah blamed Avram for that. Uksiv, Vayavo Avraham l'spola Sarah v'livkosa. So amazingly enough, Chazal attribute Sarei Imenu's earlier death, what the Chazal really termed as a premature death, ultimately to the fact that she was Moser Dinan Avram. V'hani mili de'isle dina ba'ara. Now this is also only assuming that what? That there is a way to adjudicate or a way to address these grievances here in this world. And I was about to say, if I have a problem with someone, I am permitted to address that grievance. So what's the ideal way? I'm supposed to find a Beis Din or find a Rav or find a mediator and work that out. If I choose to ignore those channels and instead go right to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's where Chazal says that's not the right approach. So therefore, again, where do we learn? This from Sari Imenu took Avram Avinu to task with HaKadosh Baruch Hu before doing anything. Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. So, by the way, just take a quick look. Look at Tosis for just a moment. Tap Tosis. The Ika Dina Ba'ara Ubi Me Sara Haya Bezdin Shal Shem Kayam. So this is amazing. So Tosis says, Sari Minu, you have a problem with Avram? First of all, it's good to know. I'm saying even Sari Minu has a problem with her husband, right? So, you know, you have a problem with Avram Avinu? No problem. There's an address. Take him to the Beis Din Shel Shem, right? Take him to the Beis Din Shel Shem and deal with it there. But don't turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the complaint before ultimately, don't turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the complaint first. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Oy lo l'tzoik yotzer min ha-nitzak. What's that incredible yisod? Really along the same lines. Woe to the tzoik, woe to the one who cries out about another, more to the one who is cried out about. Which Shabbos says, echoing, Rabbi Yitzchak seems to be echoing the same basic sentiment that we just said before. That if somebody complains about me to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so of course it's bad for me, but the truth is it's even worse for the person who cries out, because as we just said, that person is awakening din on themselves as well. Tanya Namiachir, but I will say again, remember, we're supposed to cry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when we're in distress, and obviously if there's no other way to address the situation, God is the address. The idea that Chazal are trying to say, if you have a problem with someone, try to work it out with them before you awaken the Midas Hadin on that person. Tanya Namiachir, Echad HaTzoik VeEchad HaNitzak B'mashma. Ella, Shememarin L'Tzoik Yosem Min HaNitzak. So we'll say, when somebody that cries out to awaken the din on someone else, so both individuals are scrutinized. But the one who calls out to awaken the din on another, that person is scrutinized first. What's another amazing Gemara? The curse of a simple person should never be simple or light in your eyes. In other words, I will say, the goal in life is not to get cursed by anyone. And just because someone is not quote-unquote the tzaddik doesn't mean that their curse doesn't carry some kind of weight. Shari Avimelech killed Sarah, v'niskayim b'zara, Avimelech cursed Sarah, and that curse came true in her offspring, Shene Emar, Hinei Hulecha Ksusei Nayin. But remember, when Avimelech returns Sarah Imenu, so he gives Avram gifts and he gives Sarah gifts. So he gives Avram sown, bakar, cattle, sheep, and he gives her, interestingly enough, a veil, Ksusei Nayin. Now the veil, of course, was a symbol of modesty, which was to highlight the fact that she was not defiled in any way by Avimelech. The Gemara understands over here that it's like also like a shtach. You know, you deceived us. You and your husband, you and Avram deceived us. You placed the veil over us because remember again, you claimed you were his sister. He claimed he was your brother. So again, the same way you deceived us, Amrullah, Hoil v'kasisa mimenu v'lo gilisa shu isheich, v'garamta elai atzar hazeh, because you deceived me and you told me that this man, and you did not reveal that Avram was your husband, and you caused me this tsar. Remember again, the tsar we spoke about yesterday. You should have children who have covered eyes as well. And this curse came true in her offspring. And it was when Yitzchak got old and his eyes, his eyesight was dimmed. So we'll say Chazal attribute Yitzchak Avinu's blindness ultimately to the curse of Avimelech. Quite amazing. We'll say now this is another amazing Gemara. Amar Rabbi Avo, the Olam Yehe Adam Min HaNirdafin V'lo Min HaRodfin. This is actually quite amazing. A person should better be of the pursued and not of the pursuers. I will say, now, what is it? Now, this is actually, a person should rather be one of the pursued than one of the pursuers. Listen to what the Gemara says. She'in lecha nirdaf ba'ofos yoser mitarim b'nei yona. So we'll say, because there are no birds that are more pursued, more hunted, than the pigeon and the turtle dove. Vechshiren hakasov l'gabe mizbeach. And yet what? And yet the Torah sanctions their use ultimately on the altar. So this is an incredible, incredible statement. The Gemara says that sometimes in life, it is, as much as we think it's better to be the oppressor than the oppressed, it's not true. It's better to be the oppressed than it is to be the oppressor. Why? Because when you're the oppressor, Abosai, you've compromised your humanity. When you're the oppressor, you've compromised your Tzelem Elokim. When you're the oppressor, you've compromised your Nesham. So as much pain as there is in being the oppressed, it is better to be the oppressed than ultimately the oppressor. Just the Marsha, again, I'm not going to get into it, but the Marsha, I'll just read to you one line. He has a different statement. He has a different version of this. He says, Elo deka amar, she'im hanir dafin, umitzidon lahat silon min harotfin. The Marsha says what it means is, better to be of the oppressed than the oppressors means help the oppressed. Help the oppressed. If you see someone in difficult straits, then do not assume that it's someone else's problem to be able to address the difficulties. Rather, if you see a need, roll up your sleeves and ultimately address it. So whether it's saying, get involved and help out when you see there's a need, or, no, on a basic level, what Chazal are saying is, as terrible as it is to be the oppressed, it's better out to your ruchnios, and it's better out to your human dignity to be the oppressed rather than to be the oppressor. Incredible. Says the Gemara. Well, so now we're back a little bit to Baba Kama. Ha'omer sama es einai. So remember again, the Mishnah had an interesting case where if I say to someone, blind my eye, and he does it, even if I say I free you from liability, he's chayiv. Masha enkein, if I tell him, you know, rip my clothing and I free him from liability, ultimately he's potter. So asks the Gemara, Amalei Rav Asi Bar Chama L'Rava, Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. We'll say, why is it that if I tell someone, blind my eye and I free you from all liability, that they're still chayiv, yet if I tell them, rip my clothing and I free you from all liability, then what? They're actually freed from liability. Why that distinction? Because he answered, because at the end of the day, no one really is mochel on losing a part of their body. Meaning, even if I say, poke out my eye, and it's okay, I'm mochel, no one is mochel on a part of their body. When Masha'i came, a person can absolutely be mochel on an article of clothing. But one second, is a person mochel on his pain and suffering? Disanya, hikani pitza'ani amanas liftor potter. So yet we see that a person seems to be mochel ultimately again on their pain and suffering. Because after all, if a person says, he kind of means literally hit me, pitzani is the same thing as strike me, almanas on the condition to be pater, right? And the person hits me or strikes me, what's talacha? Pater, I'm in fact pater. So we'll say, if at the end of the day, I'm mochel on my tsar, why is it so crazy that I wouldn't be mochel even on Rosh Shevar and even on parts of the body? So Ishtik, he was silent. Have you heard something about this? Meaning, do you have an answer? So I'll say there's a different piece over here. The difference over here is that when a person loses a part of their body, one part of their body, there's pegam mishpacha. In other words, it doesn't just impact the individual himself, but rather what? It impacts the greater family. It's interesting what the Gemara is suggesting over here is you can forgive anything that is your personal issue. But when things impact other people, that you don't have the right to forgive. That's why in the case where if I tell Reuven, poke out my eye, and Reuven goes ahead and I exempt you from any liability, he is not free from liability. Why? Because the loss of my eye doesn't just impact me. The loss of my eye will impact my family as well, and I don't have the ability to forgive that greater impact. Which I will say, by the way, just as an aside, is an incredible, incredible mussar, that very often in life, when we do certain things, we often assume that the impact of our actions is limited to us. And that's why, again, so it's my life, I can do what I want, but it's important to understand that both on a real level as well as on a spiritual level, every single thing we do has an impact on those around us. And on a greater level, like the Rambam writes in Hilchos Teshuva, right? The world is in perfect equilibrium between averos and mitzvos. And every single thing that I do has an incredible impact, not just on myself, but on my world. It's an important yisod. We often act because we think that our actions only exist in a vacuum. But it's not true. And what we see from the Gemara is, meaning the hashkaf that comes out from it, is you can be mochel on things that just affect you. And you know what? You know what just affects you? Just affects you without anyone else? maybe what you eat for breakfast. Okay, that just impacts you and no one else. But we'll say everything else that we do in life has greater impact beyond us, and as such, we have to be mindful of those greater impacts as well. Itmar, Rav Oshi Amar Mishum Pega. I'm sorry.
What if it's a slave who wants to be free? I've got my eye, that way I'll go free.
So the answer to that is a slave doesn't always go free with every single loss of a limb. Certain things like that, where we know like there was a subterfuge going on over here, he won't go free because of that. Also, see, it's a machlokes as to, it's not just if anyone knocks out his eye, it's only if the master knocks out his eye. That's the other piece. So Itmar, Rabbi Yoshia Amar Mishum Pekah Mishkach. So we'll say, so again, we're trying to give a couple of answers. Rabbi Yoshia says the reason ultimately, again, that he can't be mochel on damage done to limbs is because of pegam mishpacha, because of the impact it has on family. Rava Amar Mishum Shein Adam Mochel Rashi Evarim. Rava says because even if a person says poke out my eye and it's okay, right? I'm mochel, right? It's not true. Nobody actually feels that way. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, listen, this is actually very interesting. Rabbi Yochanan says Yeshein Shehu Kilav V'Yeshlav Shehu Kehein. Sometimes. Yes means no, and sometimes no means yes. Okay, so the application of this, you have to be very careful, right? What does this mean? So Tanya Amyachin, I will say now what is the Gemara saying? What the Gemara is saying is that sometimes people use yes and no in sarcastic ways that conveys a different kind of meaning. Listen to this. So Tanya Amyachin, we have a brace that supports this. Hikani Pitzani, listen to this. I go over to Reuven and say, Reuven, punch me in the face. Amanas lifta, Reuven says, really? Will I be putter from damage if I do it? Va'amar lo hein. And I say, yeah, right. Right? Yeah, sure. Sure. So what does yes, sure in that case mean? Hari yesh hein shu kalam. Now, what I'm saying over there, that yes is a sarcastic yes. So because it's a sarcastic yes, really what I'm saying is, no, I'm not pottering you. You can punch me in the face, but you're going to be absolutely chayy for what you do. Similarly, kara es ksusi, if I say to Reuven, rip my clothing, and he asks me, I'm an aslifter, will I be potter? And I say, of course not. Now that's a sarcastic, of course not, which means what? Which means yes. Hare lav shehu kehein. So it's the bottom line is, don't punch anyone in the face, right? Even if they say that you're exempt. The idea that the Gemara is saying over here, at least what's according to this answer, is sometimes what people say in these type of situations is a little bit hard to read. So sometimes what you think a person is saying is not really what they're saying. So therefore, I will say what the Gemara is assuming over here is that at the end of the day, a person is not mochel on bodily damage. That's the bottom line. Even if a person says, I am mochel, either a person is just being sarcastic or a person doesn't really mean what it is that they're saying. But Lamaisa, we assume that even if a person says, inflict bodily harm upon me and I'm mochel, I'm exempting you, we do not take that exemption at face value. Clothing, on the other hand, or material objects, if a person says, I'm exempt and I'm reading it accurately, then einachinami, I can be potter. Or mini. I'm sorry. Shavar, so we'll say bottom of wide line on the bottom. Shavar es kadi kares susi chayef. So we'll say, remember again, if I say, break my jug, tear my clothing, and I don't exempt him, even though I'm giving him the directive to do so, he is still going to be chayef. Or mini, so the Gemara is the kasha. Lishmar velo laavod, velo laavad, lishmar velo lekroa, lishmar velo lechalik laniyim. So we'll say, the halacha is that in order to make someone a shomer, we'll say a person only becomes a shomer if they are vested with the responsibility to watch an object. But if they are told, here, I'm giving you the object, and you know what, just do me a favor and lose it. Or here's an object, tear it. Or here's an object and go disperse it to the poor. We'll say that does not create a shmira, an agency. Because then that person is acting in a different capacity. Shmira is only when I give something to someone ultimately to watch it. So what the Gemara is asking over here is, the assumption we're talking about over here is, I give Reuven my jug, and I say, Reuven, do me a favor, smash the jug. So we'll say, the halacha should be, in that kind of case, Reuven is not operating as my shomer. Therefore, if he smashes the jug, actually, he should be potter. Should be potter. Look at Rashi just a moment. Lishmar v'lo le'avad. Ki yitein lishmar, dev kido eslo lishmar chayev b'pshia. But we'll say, it's only when a person has been entrusted to watch something, that he is chayiv ultimately if he's negligent with the object. Velokishev kido etzlo amenas levot ol amenas lechalig laniim delo karina beilishmar dechayvan damrei chelko su lo demafkin ninu. Well, says it's very important. You're sold, by the way, when you give something to someone and you tell them, do me a favor, destroy it, tear it up, or disperse it. That's not a shmira. That's not. Now that may be a different kind of relationship, but that is not a shomer type of relationship for which the agent will be chayiv for negligence. Therefore, the Gemara suggests over here is if I give Reuven my article of clothing or my jug and I tell him break the jug and he breaks it. In fact, what should be the halacha? He should be potter, right? Why? Because the mice again, he should not be chayiv because we assume he's chayiv because he's a shomer once he has the jug, and when he breaks it, he's acting negligently. But in fact, what the Gemara is suggesting is there's no real agency that's ever been established over here. To which the Gemara says, 1 second, Amalei Rava Lishmar. Amalei Rava Lishmar da Asi Lidei Mashma. So Rava says, I'm sorry, I skipped the line. Amrav Huna Lo Kasha Had Da Asi Liadei Had Lo Asi Liadei. So Rav Huna says it's not a problem. When do we say that ultimately again he's going to be potter? That's when the object ultimately again did not. I'm sorry. Had Da Asi Liadei means the object came to his hand before the Adon told him to destroy it. So we'll say in that moment where the object came to his hand before being told to destroy, there is an agency that is created, and therefore when he subsequently destroys it, he's going to be chayiv for negligence. Hadlo asib yadei, whereas the second case is what we'll say, before the object came to his hand, he already got the instructions to destroy it. Amrlei Rabba lishmor da asli yadei mashal. Rabba says it doesn't make sense because the lashon of lishmor means that what? The shomer already has it in his possession, to which the Gemara says, "Al the Amar Rabba Hava Hada Asli Yadei." So therefore, Rabba says both cases are where the object already came to the person's hand. V'lo Kashya Hada Asli Yadei B'Torah Shmira Hada Asli Yadei B'Torah Kriya. So we'll say it depends on the case. If the shomer got the object and he originally received it as what? As a shomer. So I give my jug to Rabba. Say, Reuven, watch this jug for me. Then after he has it in his possession, I say to him, possession, I say what? I say, Reuven, break it. The Rebbe says, what's the halacha in that case? The halacha is if he breaks it, he's chayiv. Why? Because Lamaisa, the Shemira agency has already been created. If he breaks it, he's negligent, and therefore he's going to be chayiv. Masha'inkin, Rebbe says, what? Masha'inkin, if when I give it to him, I say, Reuven, I'm giving you this jug to break it, then what? An agency has never been created. Therefore, when he subsequently breaks it, he will in fact be potter. We'll say this is a fascinating case. Who arnika de tzedaka da asi de pumpadisa? There was literally arnika de tzedaka means a tzedaka wallet. We'll say now a tzedaka wallet in this case means that there was a tzedaka fund, literally a pouch full of tzedaka money that came to pumpadisa. Afkida Rav Yosef gabeahu gavra. So we'll say Rav Yosef was the gabbai tzedaka. Rashi says gabbai hava was the gabbai tzedaka. So what happened? Rav Yosef entrusted it with a particular man. Right? So, Mosh, you have to listen to this Gemara over here. Mosh is our gabbai tzedaka, so get ready. So what happened? So Rav Yosef entrusted it with a particular man. Pashava. So we'll say the guy was negligent. Now what does it mean the guy was negligent? It doesn't mean he stole it. What does it mean? He left, he had the pouch of money in his house, and what happened? He left the door open. He was negligent. So asu gande ganvua. So what happens? Thieves came and they stole the tzedakah money. So chayve Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef wanted to say to the ganav, you're chayv, right? You're chayv for negligence. You're a shomer. So let's say for argument's sake, the guy's a shomer chinam, right? Let's say he's an unpaid custodian. Is still chayv for what? For negligence. So therefore, he told the guy, you have to pay back the money to tzedakah. Listen to this. This is actually quite interesting. But what did we just say before? A shomer agency is only affected when the job of the shomer is to watch the object. But if the job of the shomer, if the job of the custodian, we'll call him, is to distribute the funds, then what Rabbi say? That's not shmira. That's not a shomer. If that's the case, and that's just based on technicality. The way that the halacha frames shmira, a shomer, is I entrust an object with someone, and what's the job of that individual? Watch it, guard it. I don't want you to don't tear it up, don't destroy it, don't disperse it. That's shmira. So ask the Gemara over here. This money was entrusted by Rav Yosef to this guy for what purpose? To distribute, right? So if it's a if his job is to distribute, then what? Then he's not a shomer. If he's not a shomer, then what? Then he shouldn't be chayiv for pshia. If that's the case, how could Rav Yosef say that he's chayiv? Oh, both say this is amazing. Amar le ani de pumpadisa make its kais lehu v'lishmahu. Both say, listen to this. The way the tzedakah was set up in pumpadisa, Bosai, is that each ani was given an allowance. Meaning it was known how much money from that pot was going to be distributed to each ani. Look at Rashi. Kayitz means there was an established set amount for each ani. So kayitz lehu mamon, kach v'kach l'shabes l'chol echad havali mamon, shiesh l'tovim v'karina b'lishmur. Also listen to this. This is amazing. So because that money essentially was already allocated to the aniyim, it was already as if that each bit of that money was already allocated to a particular ani. Therefore, the individual was considered to be the shomer for the different aniyim. So let's say it's an amazing yisod. Even though the money was not yet distributed, in essence, it was allocated. So there was no distribution, but there was already an allocation. Because there was an allocation, the aniyim were considered to be the owners of that money already. And therefore what? The shomer, the guy who was watching it, was considered to be a bona fide shomer. And therefore when he left the door open, he was a posheya. And therefore he would be chayiv ultimately to pay back the monies that were lost. Which I will say is actually an incredible yisod in hilchos tzedakah. Not our topic today, because the interesting shailas about what happened if you allocate money to tzedakah and then you decide you want to use it for something else. You say, I wanted to give to organization A, and then you know what? I got a call from organization B. They do great work. I want to shift. So it's interesting halachas. Can you shift monies from one thing to another? So we'll get to this actually. We'll see this sugya that there is also potential distinction between organizational allocations versus individual allocations. Meaning there is a possibility to say that if I know an ani, if I designate money towards that ani, once that money is designated for the ani, do you see from here that's what? That the ani becomes a partial owner of that money already. So again, we'll discuss. Oh, so that's what we'll discuss. As we'll get to this, I guess. Let's say, Hadron Alach HaChovel Mazel Tov. Mazel Tov. What is the chos? To finish Perek Ches, 8th Perek of Baba Kama. Now we come to our Goza. So we'll say this again, riveting Gemara. Double riveting. So says the Mishnah. Hagoza, and don't read into that double riveting. I'm not like setting up like, oh yeah, real riveting. This is mamish, like, I don't use these words loosely. I don't say that about any Gemara. So I'll say, listen to this. Hagozal Eitzim. No, this really, you're getting into real, like Choshe Mishpat, you know what I mean? Hagozal Eitzim, my son Kiel. We'll say, this actually is fantastically, amazingly lemaisa, because this has to deal with what, well, we'll see. Hagozal Eitzim, my son Kiel. We'll say, a person steals wood. I steal wood, and I make it into utensils. Tsemer va'asan begadim, or I steal wool, and I fashion it into clothing. Mishalim kishas ha'gazelo. Oh, boss, this is a fascinating halacha. So what happens over here in situations where I steal something, and over the course of time, meaning between the time that I stole and between the time that I repay, there's a change in the object. So how do I measure repayment? To which the Mishnah says, we actually saw this earlier, repayment amount is locked in at the time of theft. So whatever the value of the item was at the time of the theft, that is my obligation. Which I both say, understand, has incredible repercussions, because let's say there's some type of appreciation or depreciation of the item. Again, apparently we'll see that we don't really take that into account. A value of our obligation of repayment locked in at the time of theft. Gozal para meuberes v'yalda. Similarly, let's say I stole a pregnant cow and Mazel Tov gave birth. Or Rachel Tuna v'gazaza, or I stole a sheep. Tuna v'osai means that was heavy with wool, and I sheared it. So Mishalim d'mei para medes leleid, u'd'mei Rachel ha'omedes ligazes. So when repaying, I have to pay the value of a pregnant cow, and the value of a sheep that is, I don't know, there's probably a better term than filled with wool, that is ready to be shorn. Ready to be shorn. So same idea. Gozal para v'nisarba etzlo. We'll say, if let's say I stole a cow, and the cow became pregnant, right, while it was with me, b'shah tova. So what happens? V'yolda, and then it gave birth. So we'll say, in this case, I stole an unpregnant cow. It became pregnant when it was with me. Let me clarify that. Meaning, it became pregnant while it was, you know, while it was in my possession, Right, okay, good. Someone getting some weird looks from people. Someone is sabra etzlo, v'yolda, and then it gave birth, or Rachel Vinita Naorabos, I stole the sheep. And remember again, the sheep was in my possession for a while, and now it became filled with wool. The Gazaza, Meshan Kishas Akzira. So we'll see in the Gemara why exactly the Mishnah needs to say all of these cases, because the principle is the same in all of them. And in fact, the Mishnah says it again. Ze'aklal, the general principle is Kol HaGazlonim, Meshalim Kishas Akzira. We'll say all thieves pay in accordance with the value of the item at the time it was stolen. Fine, says the Gemara. So we'll say Amri Eitzim Vasan Kelim in Shifan Lo. So the Gemara makes an interesting diuk. The Mishnah's case was a situation where you stole wood and you made it into utensils. I want to be clear on one other piece here. The other piece, what's the operative principle? There are two operative principles here. Operative principle number one is that when assessing the value of the stolen item, we assess the value at the time the item was stolen. But there's another important principle here. And in fact, if you look at Rashi, the first Rashi in the Mishnah, I'm sorry, I skipped it. Rashi says, There's another operative principle over here, which is what? That when I steal an object and I change that object, I have acquired that object. Bo says, isn't it incredible you sold? There's such a thing called kinyane gizela. There are kinyanim, or acquisitions of theft. If I steal an object and I change it, you see, obviously, where everyone's going to agree with is the following. If I steal an object and what? It's extant. Meaning, let's say the object that I stole is right here, and it's the same object that I stole. Then what? Veheishav es hagizela asher gazal. Then I have an obligation to return the object. In this Mishnah, this paragraph, I was dealing with cases where I changed the object. What happens when a thief changes the object? So what the Mishnah is teaching me is I, the thief, acquire the object. There's something called the kinyon, the kinyon in gizela, and I acquire it when I change it. And that's so I acquire when I change it, and I'm obligated to repay in accordance with the value of the object at the time that I stole it. Says the Gemara, Amri Eitzim Asam Kelim In. When do I acquire an object? That's only if I take the wood. Let's say I take the wood, and I fashion it into a utensil. Av Shifan Lo. But I will say, now Shifan means I planed the wood. So I think that's the right verb. Right, you plane it, meaning you smooth it down. Sand it down. So we'll say, so apparently, right, Alan, I'm right? Sanding it down, right? Planing it. So what happens? So this is actually very interesting. So the Gemara says, when do you get to keep the object? That's only when what? When you've actually changed the object, changed the wood into utensil. But if all I did was plane down the wood, then what? Then Enachinami, it sounds like over here, I would have to give back the wood itself. Because in other words, in order for Shinoi to be Kona, it has to be what? Something significant. It has to be a real change. But apparently sanding down wood is not enough of a change, and I'd have to return the wood itself. Similarly, Semer Va'asan Begadimin, we'll say if I stole wool and I made the wool into clothing, then Enachinami, that's enough of a substantive change to make me have to return, that I acquire the wool, and I just have to pay the value of the wool. However, Libnon Lo, but I will say, if all I did was what? If all I did was I bleached the wool, then that is not enough of a significant change, and what? I would actually have to return the wool itself. So I will say, just so you understand, this is not just on the thief, this is also on the victim. Because what it says is, let's say I steal wood from Reuven, and I sanded it down, and Reuven says, well, I don't want to sand it down wood, give me back the money. I have the ability to say to Reuven, no, I'm returning the object to you, or I bleached his wool. So he says, I don't want bleached wool, I want unfinished wool. So we'll say what the Gemara is saying over here is, not every single change, not every single shinui affects an acquisition of the item on behalf of the ganav. Apparently, only significant shinuyim affect the ownership of the gazla, of the thief. Or minu, it's more izakasha. Gazla eats him. If I stole wood, v'shifan, and I planed it down, avonim v'sisisan, or I stole stones, and I chiseled them, tsemer v'libnan, or I stole wool, and I wind it, pishtan v'nikal, or I stole linen, and Likal means I will say I cleaned it. So what's talacha? Mishalim kishas hagzela. I have to pay in accordance with the value of the item at the time that I stole it. Shabbos say tells us what means what for our purposes that I acquired these items. So this contradicts what we just said before. We just said before, based on our Mishnah, that Shabbos say planing down wood is not enough of a shinui for the ganav to acquire it, and whitening wool is not enough of a shimur for the ganav to acquire it either, meaning in those cases, you'd have to pay back the wood, you'd have to pay back the wool. And yet you see from the braisa that's what? That planing down wood is a shinui, bleaching wool is a shinui, that would affect the acquisition of these items on behalf of the ganav. So which one is it? Amra bayitan didon katani shinui dirabon and the hajra. So says Abaye, our Tana, meaning the Tana of our Mishnah, Rabosai included even cases of Shinui Dirabanan. Rabosai, Shinui Dirabanan are examples of changes that ultimately return, that can be returned to their normal state. And all the more so, a Shinui D'oraisa, which cannot be returned to its previous state. For example, Eitzim v'asa'im kelim. So we'll say, for example, if you take wood and you make it into utensils, so we'll say that could actually be what we call a shinoi d'hadar. That could be a reversible change. How so? Because what type of wood are we talking about? Be'eitzim mishupin. So we'll say, because remember the Mishnah is dealing with the case of what? Where I stole sanded down wood. What does it mean to steal sanded down wood? Umaynihu nisarin. Those are boards. The shinoi d'hadar libriyasu. Because I will say, that is the type of change that is reversible. How is it reversible? Because remember, think about this. If I steal boards, and I make those boards into a utensil, that is a reversible change. How is it a reversible change? Take apart right? Let's keep it easy. I make a bench, right? So that is a reversible change, right? Because I could take apart the bench. The assumption the Gemara is making over here is I didn't cut down the boards or anything. So again, that's an example of I stole wood. I fashioned it into a bench, Abosai. That's the case of the Mishnah, the Gemara Abai is suggesting. The case of the Mishnah Bosai is with what we'll call a shinui drabanan dahadra, rabbinic change that is reversible. So that's the case of the Mishnah. So I'm stealing wood, I'm making it into a bench that is a reversible change. It's a reversible change. It could take apart the bench. They will say, now the Mishnah is similarly, semer vasan begadim. Similarly, will say, if I stole wool and I made it into clothing, so what's that case? But semer taboy, that's a case of also where the wool was already made into thread. The shinoi dahad libriyasu, I could reverse that change. How so? The ibay sasrele, because also I could take apart the clothing and what? Reverse it back to its original thread. So the Gemara Sabai is suggesting that our Mishnah Rabosai is talking about these, when I steal already a finished item, finished wood, or finished wool, and I make it into utensil. And the chiddush is what? Even though what I've done is reversible, the Mishnah still paskins that what? Even with a reversible change, the thief still acquires the item and doesn't have to pay back the object. Rather, what? Pays back the value in accordance with the value of the object at the time it was stolen. And all the more so, the Mishnah would agree, the Choshkin Shinoi D'araisa. You both say, what's a Shinoi D'araisa? An irreversible change. So the Mishnah is teaching me that the thief acquires the object even with a shinui d'rabbanan, a rabbinic change, which is what? A reversible change, and all the more so with what we call a shinui d'araisa, which is an irreversible change. The Tana Bera, on the other hand, the Tana of the Braisa, he holds like this, shinui d'araisa katani, the shinui d'rabbanan lo katani. The Braisa only brings down cases of Shinui D'araisa. So what's the case of Shinui D'araisa? Case of Shinui D'araisa would be where I plane down wood. Also, when you sand down wood, then what? That's irreversible. When you bleach wool, that's irreversible. So the Tana is only talking about irreversible changes and telling me that in that case, the ganav acquires the object, but is not dealing with reversible changes. Next, Rav Ashi says, well, so we're just trying to reconcile the Brais with our Mishnah. Rav Ashi Amar, Tana didan nami shinui d'araisa katani. So Rav Ashi says, no, our Tana is also talking about only, meaning our Tana, the Tana of our Mishnah, is also only talking about shinui d'araisa, irreversible changes. And what's his case? Eitzim v'asam. Can I both say, what's the case of wood that was made into a kli? Buchnoi. Well, it's the moment where I take a piece of wood and I fashion it into a pestle, right? Like a mortar pestle. Dahainu shifan. That would be the case ultimately again of where I plane down the object. Semer vasan begadim. We'll say, what's the case of where I took wool and I made it into clothing? That's the case of nimate. We'll say, so apparently if you take wool and you press it, you compact it, you make what's called namati, which is felt. That is irreversible. Why? Because Rashi points out, once it's been compacted, you can't separate out the individual wool fibers anymore. But is that true? But then what about bleaching? Is bleaching considered to be a real shinui of wool? Because remember, the Braisa said that if I steal wool and I bleach it, I don't know if bleaching is the right term for wool, but libun, whitening it. So if I whiten it, is that really considered to be a real shinui that would affect the acquisition of the wool on the part of the ganav? Or minu, raise a kasha, lo hispik lit no lo achet savo. So we'll say this actually is talking about a different kind of case. This is talking about a case. You look at Rashi, his big litno, the reishis hagaz lakoin achet sevo. So both say, this is about reishis hagaz means that there's an obligation to give the first shearings to a coin. First obligation to give the first shearings to a coin. So the halacha is, so let's say, lo hispik litno lo achet savo. Let's say, now you're supposed to give raw, unprocessed wool to the kohen. Let's say I dyed it. Let's say, lo hispik litno lo achet savo. I dyed the wool. So we'll say, if I dyed the wool before I gave it to the kohen, pater. In fact, I am pater from giving him that wool. Livno velo tzavo. Chayim. But yet, if I just bleached it, but I didn't dye it, I'm still chayiv to give him the wool. So Rashi says over here, Potter, the kanye b'shinoi b'damim nami lo mishalim delav gozel gemara. So essentially what the gemara says is like this. If I take that wool, and I change it in a substantive way, I'm no longer obligated to give it to the kohen. What's an example of changing the wool in a substantive way? Dyeing it. But if all I did was what? Was whiten it, that's not a substantive change. I still have to give it to the coin. So I'll say, so what do you see? What do you see over here? You see over here that whitening wool is not a substantive change. If it's not a substantive change, then what? Then when a ganav steals the wool and dyes it, or not dyes it, excuse me, and whitens it, then what? He shouldn't acquire the wool, and he should have to repay the wool itself. So it's a kasha. Yet the Braisa said that when he dyes the wool, ultimately again, when he dyes the wool, he does acquire it. To which the Gemara says, "Lo kasha ha Rabbi Shimon v'ha Rabbanan." We'll say it's not a contradiction. Two different opinions of Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanan. We'll say we'll stop over here for today. I'm going to record a few more lines still this afternoon. We're going to pick up towards the daf and Meretz Hashem tomorrow. So we'll stop over here. I'm leaving you on a cliffhanger. Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanan. Stay tuned. It'll be recorded a little bit later. Yes. Oh, I was like, thank you. So tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. Elul b'shat tov.
No, I didn't mean that.
That's what happens. I'm too trusting.
So I meant Sunday.
Sunday. You know, we'll WhatsApp the schedule out. You know, we'll WhatsApp. Tomorrow, regular time, Daf, Mesillas Shem 5:45. And the Daf will start a few minutes early also again tomorrow with Daf, at 5:55. Shkoyach. No problem. Say just to finish the rest of Tzadik Gimel Amud Beis 93b. So we left off the Gemara says Rava Omar. I'm sorry, Amar Abayi Lo Kasha. So it's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22, 24, 26 lines up from the bottom. So Amar Abayi Lo Kasha, there is no contradiction. Har Rabbi Shimon Har Rabbanan. The two different opinions of both say that were reflected ultimately again represent the opinions of Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanan. Tisanya Gozozo Tavo Va'argo. If you went ahead and you sheared a sheep, Tovo means you took the wool and you spun it into thread, va'argo, and then you wove it. Ein mitstarif. Ultimately, it does not combine. Now, what is this referring to over here? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, ein mitstarif, tisnan b'shchitas chulin, chamesh rechilos gozizos kol achas mana upras, chayavos bereshis hagaz. The halacha is that in terms of giving the first shearings to a kohen, one is only chayiv to do so if one shears a certain volume of wool. So if the certain volume of wool, which specifically is the wool of five different sheep, then one is obligated in the mitzvah of Reishis Hagaz to give the first shearings to the kohen. However, Reishis Hagaz ma'o agazaz racha la'achar shegazaza no'osei min agiza la'kohen, l'fi mashir, tzibavashatei nesina chashuva, tekatani dim gazaz achas v'tzava v'chein chenis v'chein shlishis in tztarefes l'mana, upras l'schayiv dekanei b'shinui. So the halacha is, that the Bryce is saying over here, is if you sheared a sheep, and then afterwards you went ahead and you spun it into thread, the halacha is that the wool does not combine. So if you shear one sheep, and then go ahead and comb that wool, or make that wool into thread, then that sheep, those shearings, will not combine with the other shearings to make one chayiv, to make one chayiv ultimately again for Reishis Hagaz. Livno, what happens if one bleached or one whitened the wool? Rabbi Shimon Omer Ein Mitztarif. Rabbi Shimon says the whitened wool does not combine with the other wool. The Chachamim Mitztarif, and the Chachamim say no, it does go ahead and combine. So the point that Rabbi Shimon is making over here is that libun, that the, or I should say whitening of something, is ultimately not a shinoi. Is a shinui. And therefore, because it's a shinui, therefore that wool does not combine with the other wools. Versus the chachamim who say that that libun, that whitening, is not enough of a shinui to allow the thief to go ahead or to allow the person to acquire it. Rava Amar Rava says, Hava Hav Rabbi Shimon. They could both be Rabbi Shimon, Velo Kasha, and there's no contradiction. Ha de naftse nafutse, ha de sarke saruke. One is talking about where he separated the pieces of wool, the strands of wool, ultimately by hand, versus one is talking about where he separated the strands of wool ultimately again with a comb. So when there's a comb that's being used, ultimately that's a concrete shinui, and therefore one would be chayiv, or one would be kona the item in such a situation. Rabbi Chiya bar Avin Amar had the chavre had the kavre kabruye. One is talking about where you just washed the wool, and therefore whitening it through washing. And one is talking about where you whitened it through using sulfur. So when ultimately you're using sulfur, that's a more permanent change. And that would be a shinui that's kona. To which the Gemara says, Hashta yesh lomar, tseva l'Rabbi Shimon lo havi shinui, libon havi shinui. So now the Gemara says, if you're going to tell me that dyeing the wool, according to Rabbi Shimon, is not a shinui, that would allow the individual to be kona it, so is libun going to be a shinui? Disanya, gozaz rishon rishon utzevao rishon rishon, utzevao rishon rishon va'argo, ein mitztarif. The halacha is that if you sheared the first sheep, and let's say you dyed the wool, or you took the wool, or you spun it into thread, or you wove it into something, so then that wool does not combine with the subsequent wools to form the volume, the necessary shear for Eishes Hagaz. Reb Shem ben Yehuda Om Mishim Reb Shimon Tzava'o Mitztarif. Rabbi Shimon Yehuda, on the other hand, says that along together with Rabbi Shimon, that if you dye wool, ultimately, again, it is mitzvah if it does connect. Now, what that means for our purposes is that according to Rabbi Shimon, it sounds like that even if you dye the wool, that's not enough of a shinoi to allow the dyer to ultimately acquire it. Rather, the wool is considered to be the original possession of the owner. In this case, owner, of course, is the kohen. To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Elokashia, Harabbanan libud Rabbi Shimon, Harab Shimon ben Yehuda libud Rabbi Shimon. To which the Gemara answers that there are two different versions of Rabbi Shimon. There's the Rabbanan according to Rabbi Shimon, and there's Rabbi Shimon Yehuda according to Rabbi Shimon. Rava Amar Rava says, Liolam lo pligi. In reality, there is no machlok, yes? Liolam lo pligi Rabbanan libud Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. The Rabbanan really don't argue Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda. V'shayni tzeva hol aviyocha lahaviro al yidei tzafon. The difference with the dyeing is that even the effects of dyeing could be reversed. Tzafon is literally like soap or detergent. V'chikatani hasam lo hispik litno lo atche tzavao potter. And when the Braisa said before that if you didn't give it to the coin before it was dyed, that you are subsequently potter from Reishis Hagaz. V'okimna kedivri hakol b'kolo de'ilan de'lo avad. That could be talking about the type of dye, like literally from a tree, that ultimately was irreversible. So we'll say we stop over here for today, and we leave off again still in the midst of a very important machlokes. And this important machlokes is what type of shinui, what type of a change of an object ultimately allows the individual, whether again it's a case of a thief, that's really how we started this case, what is it, what type of shinui is it that allows a thief to ultimately keep the object in question, versus what is the type of change that is deemed halachically insignificant enough that it still allows the owner to retain ownership over that object. So we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up with Amar Abayi tomorrow. Wishing everyone a wonderful rest of the day.